DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
When a big national power like Georgia loses, there is always going to be a little bit of, see, I told you so after the fact. A lot of national media people are going to step up and get their pound of flesh on UGA because that's the kind of thing that gets a lot of attention here. And, you know, that's to be expected. And the see, I told you so's don't necessarily have to come from people who actually did some telling before the fact. It just becomes kind of a convenient thing to throw what looks like dirt on the grave after that. I'm going to start today's show with some of that. And honestly, I'm not doing this to wallow in the misery here. For the most part, we turned the page on the program yesterday in terms of feeling a little bit better about the Florida game in 2 weeks, looking ahead to solutions about how Georgia can play better. Thought we did a pretty good job of doing that yesterday. So go into the negative here from the one national writer I'm about to read to you is not about, like I said, wallowing in the misery so much as it is responding to the point that the writer makes, which is honestly not all wrong, not all insignificant. Some of it's probably worth paying some credence to. But by doing so, I think it actually sets us up for something pretty interesting this morning here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. So let me, with that said, turn my attention to Dan Wolkin from USA Today, who in writing about Georgia on the heels of its loss to LSU says this: can we finally dispense with the ridiculous notion that Georgia is, quote, more talented than last year? People have been saying that. Wolkin goes on to say, the biggest problem with a fan base like Georgia's, which used to live in terror that the other shoe is about to drop, buying into the idea that it's the second coming of Alabama, is that Alabama doesn't represent reality for Georgia or anyone. Alabama never loses games like that. He means the one that Georgia just played LSU. Wolkin then says, Georgia's always going to have really good players, but the combination of talent and experience that got the Bulldogs to the brink of a national title last season was not something you can replicate every year. And for a fan base that was undeservedly starting to get that invincible feeling, this was a crash back to a world of personnel problems exposed and coaching gripes in power. Now listen, the last part of that is indisputable, right? I mean, there have been plenty of coaching gripes here over the last few days and some personnel problems exposed, maybe some of that as well. I will also grant Wolkin this, that as someone who lives most of my life directly within the bubble of Dog Nation, maybe there was a little bit of unjustified feelings of invincibility. And maybe there was a little bit of an unjustified comparison to Alabama. Maybe even I, unfortunately, was guilty of some of that. Now, Georgia did play Alabama tooth and nail a year ago, but Alabama's been in the spot that it's in now for years and years and years. Georgia's sort of spot in that perch has only been about a year's worth here. So maybe there was some undue feelings of superiority around Georgia fans. I won't deny some of that. And the rest of the season is going to determine if that was completely, you know, erroneous, if that was completely out of left field, or if those feelings that Georgia fans had at the beginning of the season were justified. Now, I assume that Georgia's going to play better here the rest of the way. But if it doesn't, guys like Dan Wolkin who want to say that Georgia fans were delusional, or whatever word you want to use there, to an honest point, some of that will be maybe justified if that ends up being more of the same like we saw this past Saturday against LSU. But there is, however, another point that Wolkin makes in this that I think it's really important to rebut here. Wolkin says it's ridiculous that some Georgia fans thought that this Georgia team is more talented than last year's Georgia team. Now, this, to a certain extent, makes my head hurt to kind of go back down this road again, because we have discussed this over and over and over again, the difference between talent and experience. That, yes, experience is really important to have, and yet if you have an experienced middling level of talent compared to an elite level of talent that doesn't have experience, I'll take the talent over the experience any day of the week, which is not to discount what Georgia had last year with Chubb and Michelle and Lorenzo Carter and Roquan Smith. Obviously, those are all-time great Georgia players. They'll be revered for 50 years from now in terms of what they did for Georgia in 2017. But the overall notion that this Georgia team is more talented than last year's Georgia team, frankly, is just quantifiably true. You can measure it based on recruiting rankings. You can measure it based on potential NFL futures. You see more of that kind of stuff on this Georgia team than you saw on last Georgia team, even if some of the guys that were the most talented were also the most experienced and had big season for Georgia in 2017. So it's simply false to say that this Georgia team is less talented than last year's team. However, it also may end up being true that this Georgia team, despite that talent, may not be quite as good as the one in 2017. That's fair to point out. But to keep with the same line of conversation here for a moment, let me give you a couple of examples of how I think it sort of bears out that, yes, this team is more talented, even if the results right now are in doubt the rest of the season. Look at Georgia's offensive line for a moment. Now, most people would say the offensive line has not had a great season. That's probably true. But it played without Andrew Thomas for a little while at the beginning of the season, and it's playing without Ben Cleveland, a former five-star recruit, for a long stretch right now. Imagine if Georgia's offensive line a year ago had suffered those level of injuries. Would Georgia have been able to replace those guys as effectively as it's done so this year? No, it would not. It did not have a Cade Mays-level player as a backup a year ago. It just didn't. This year, the fact that Georgia does have that is an example of some talent that Georgia has now that otherwise would not have had. I think that's an important point to bring up. However, as Kirby Smart, if he was sitting here right now, would say, listen, B.A., you can't get too worked up about what Dan Wolkin's saying here. These kinds of issues showing up, bubbling up after a loss like LSU, it's just to be expected. I mean, there are lots of questions being asked right now about whether or not Georgia was exposed against LSU on Saturday. And Kirby Smart, when he spoke to the media on Tuesday night, had a pretty pragmatic response to all of that. Here's what Kirby had to say.
Well, I think a lot of times it exposes some of your weaknesses. I think wins can do that. I personally think that the games we've won that so many people have, you know, talked about, I've seen some of the same mistakes, and we've highlighted them to our team. And sometimes it takes that loss to make them really understand. And I certainly think our guys recognize that we have to get better, and we're going to. The only way to get better, guys, is to work, and that's what we're doing now. It's time to grow, and there's no magic pill. You don't take a magic pill and say, we're just going to get better. No, we got to go to work, and we got to go to work as coaches. We got to go to work as players, and we're going to continue to do that.
I think that's an important point for Kirby Smart, saying that I'm going to use this LSU game to try to get the players' attention even further than I've got before, and there's no magic pill here. We've just got to get back to work, which kind of brings us back to what Dan Wolkin said about Georgia's talent level. Being deficient compared to the team in 2017, factually, I think he's wrong, but what's going to end up making him look right if Georgia doesn't get better in one key area here that right now would seem to be specifically about talent? And that's the issue that Georgia's had with stopping the run, not just against LSU, but against Missouri to a certain extent, against Vanderbilt to a certain extent. Right now, it just doesn't look like Georgia's got the bodies, both the size, the athleticism, the overall talent, to get that done. Now, we've talked a lot this week about how maybe that could change by the end of the season if some of the young players can step up. But you can't deny right now that if Wolkin wants to point out the talent issue for Georgia's defense, especially when it comes to stopping the run, there's some of that kind of sticks here a little bit. That's a criticism for a Georgia that seems to have some validity at the moment. And in fact, Kirby Smart, on the subject of where he thinks the team needs to get better this week, really drilled down on that very intensely on the subject of why there were so many missed tackles against LSU. Here's a little bit from Kirby on that.
Tackling, poor gap fits, maybe conditioning played a little bit into it, but at the end of the day, we got to try to put the players in a better position, and we got to tackle good. You got to be physical in this league. Those backs are what we're going to face every week. 215, 220 pounds downhill. You got to hit, wrap up, and we got to get more people to the ball so that it's not a one-on-one tackles. You don't win a lot of one-on-one tackles in this league. You win a lot of two-on-one tackles. We got to have more two-on-one tackles.
I think what Kirby says there about the notion of two-on-one tackles, double-teaming a ball carrier to bring him down as opposed to the one-on-one tackling, I think that's really interesting in light of who Georgia is about to play two Saturdays from now, Florida. Dan Mullen, one of these classic spread-style coaches, and you know Bill Conley, some of the people at Football Study Hall have written about this, that one of the things that the spread coaches like to do is increase the number of solo tackles you have to make on them. That's the whole point of spread. Spread you out wide, so it's one-on-one battles, and you're having to make tackles there in space. So Kirby Smart says he wants less of that, but Dan Mullen, two Saturdays from now, is going to try to create an offensive game plan where Georgia's doing more of that, the one-on-one tackling stuff, which is going to put even more pressure on the talent level that Georgia does have in its front seven. Also, when you talk about guys like LaMichael Pirine and Jordan Scarlett, those Florida running backs here, much like what you saw from LSU with Brossette and Edwards-Helaire last week, Kirby Smart says, hey, tackling these kind of running backs, that's what SEC football is all about.
Probably the quality of back you play, it pops up more, and the exposure to those tackles, you know, sometimes they don't get through there. And so it doesn't expose your corners, your secondary, when it doesn't get past your linebackers. But the more it gets back there, the more you get exposed. And we had a couple, especially in short yardage situations, where we took chances to try to stop them. Ball spit, and it was a one-on-one tackle with Richard or a one-on-one tackle with JR, and we didn't win the one-on-one battle. And when you do that, they're going to convert, and the conversions turn to 17, 18 yards.
All right, let me do a quick bottom line on all of this, because I think Kirby Smart's making a lot of sense there. When Dan Wilkins says that this Georgia team is less talented than last year's Georgia team, I think he's wrong. However, if Georgia doesn't get better before the end of the season at stopping the run and limiting those opportunities for rushing yards for its opponents, Wilkins and the other guys who say that about Georgia's talent level are certainly going to appear to be right. That's why it's so crucial, as we talked about with Mike Griffith a little bit yesterday, as we've talked to Jeff Sintel now about a couple of times, for some of those young players on defense who seem to be close, Jordan Davis, Channing Tindall, Brenton Cox, who's on the field yet not generating a lot of sacks, for those guys to keep stepping towards bigger roles, bigger opportunities, bigger playing time. A lot of the talent on this Georgia roster right now admittedly is young. But as that young talent grows up, Georgia's defense has a chance of improving before the season's done as well. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Good to have you with us live on video, 10 a.m. Dog Nation. Facebook, YouTube, Twitter feed. Fun to be with you on video every day. You also enjoy being on the radio, Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, every day at noon there in the Classic City. That's always a blast. And in podcast form, whether it's the Apple Podcast Player, the Google stuff there for the Android devices, the world-famous DogNation.com. Some of you listen straight through SoundCloud, however you get to us. Thanks for being a part of our program here today. Also, huge thanks to Marco's Pizza for making it all possible. And as a way of saying thanks to them, why don't you say hello, Primo, by taking advantage of a great offer. Two medium, two-topping pizzas. Every day value of $6.99 each. It's authentic Italian quality pizza. It tastes good, and it's good on your wallet as well. In fact, so much so that I saw our buddy Dave Holcomb, who works with us here at Dog Nation World Headquarters, enjoying a little Marco's Pizza last night. Don't think I didn't notice that. He put a little bit of that out there on social media. That was a nice thing to see. And if you're like Dave and you take advantage of that great offer, you're going to be really happy too. Gianmarco Family Recipe in the sauce. Three cheeses blended together. I think it's really one of the real crucial deals there with the Marco's Pizza. You got to have all that cheese blended together. I even get extra cheese on top of that sometimes. So it's good times. Check out Marco's Pizza at marcos.com. You will be glad you did that. A little bit different guest for us today. You guys have been asking to have him back on the program again, so we made some time today to welcome in Barrett Salih from CBS Sports. Really interesting guy when it comes to covering the SEC. Barrett's got some big things to say. We'll talk to Barrett Salih here coming up in just a couple of minutes. Before we get to that, though, I mentioned to our video audience before the show began that I've actually got some good news that I probably overlooked a little bit. I need to give some more attention to this. Jeff said this on Tuesday. The fact of the matter is we had so much going on Tuesday, I couldn't quite give this the full attention that it deserved. But N'Kobe Dean, the five-star linebacker from Horn Lake, Mississippi, near Memphis, who was supposed to take an official visit for the Vanderbilt game, the Georgia coaches asked him not to do that because they didn't really feel like they were going to be able to roll out the red carpet for him that day the way that they wanted to. Well, Dean agreed not to come for the Vanderbilt game, but has now rescheduled an official visit for the Auburn game coming up on November 10th. I think that's good news. I think it's a better situation for Georgia than the Vanderbilt official visit would have been, if not the best overall scenario there. On Before the Hedges yesterday, presented by Kroger, here's how Jeff described the nature of Dean's upcoming official visit, what it means for the good and maybe not so good for Georgia with N'Kobe Dean. Here's Jeff on that.
I think there's one thing that nobody has thought or felt or said on a message board yet about the LSU game, and that was maybe how Georgia was pretty wise not to want to host N'Kobe Dean for his official visit to take away from some prep for the LSU point. Game. Because obviously the Bulldogs needed to be all hands on deck in the film room for that. And I don't know how you should feel about this. Number one, you're going to have him in town for a big ball game where Athens will likely be popping no matter what the Tigers' record looks like at that time, and no matter whether Gus Malzahn's seat can get any hotter there on the plane. But it does show one thing. It shows, number one, how tight his schedule is, because he's going to take an official visit after that to Auburn the following weekend, and then look for that LSU official now to come at the end of his season after he's been in his All-Star game, and then after he's also finished his state championship run at Horn Lakes, Mississippi. So a lot of stuff to think about there. Georgia gets him on campus for an official visit, and now that seems very likely, when in the past it was very much in doubt.
So I'd rather have him in December, but the fact that Dean is coming in November for a big home game, nice atmosphere, I think that's pretty good for Georgia. And one of the things that I think makes Dean an attractive prospect for Georgia's 2019 class, despite the fact that Georgia's got some good freshman linebackers right now, other good linebacker commits for the class of 2019, when N'Kobe Dean recently spoke to Jeff Sintel, he explained that, you know what, all that talent that's already there, not a turnoff for me. If anything, I like to be a part of the program where the very best linebackers want to play. Here's more from N'Kobe Dean on that. Another reason for UGA fans to like him.
What do you think would be the biggest reason if it ended up being Georgia?
My competitive nature. I know they deep at linebacker. You know, depth is good, so I do, and I do want myself to be challenged. So I know if I can beat out everybody else, I can probably be the best.
Would you worry if you went to a place and you're on the first team in like 2 or 3 weeks? Would you worry about that type of school that maybe they don't have enough guys like you to push you?
I would. I mean, I know how hard I work, how hard I would probably push everybody else to work to step the game up if I did ever feel like that.
So listen, it's talent like that with that kind of competitive fire that you want taking official visits to your program. I think it's good news that Dean's going to be at Georgia November 10th. As I said, December after the season's done, probably even better. But this is pretty good for UGA, and we'll see if the Dogs can win this recruiting battle over some of the South's top powers. It is Dog Nation Daily here presented by Marco's Pizza. As much as you love the action on the football field, don't forget there's also great action happening away from the field as well. Let me take a moment to tell you about that right now, because you know there's nothing like cheering on the Dogs every single Saturday in a sea of red and black, whether you were in Baton Rouge this past weekend or Athens on a regular Saturday. But you don't always have to be at the game to experience that energy. You can also connect with a local alumni chapter for a game-watching party. With a passionate volunteers, alumni chapters keep you connected to your fellow Bulldogs through meaningful events and charitable actions. And it's not just game-watching parties, but it's also the Dog Days of Service. There are also a variety of professional and philanthropic activities that you can attend with other alumni of the University of Georgia right there in your city. Because with over 318,000 active alumni in 80 different chapters, the Bulldog Nation stretches to all corners of the world. UGA's commitment to you doesn't end when you leave Athens. That's a good thing. And no matter where you call home, you'll never have to bark alone. I like that line there. Make sure you connect with your local alumni chapter today by visiting this website, alumni.uga.edu/chapters. One more time, alumni.uga.edu/chapters. Great to have you in the program. Hope you enjoy Barrett Salee right now. And, of course, you know him and love him from CBS Sports. You see him on Twitter at Barrett Salee. He's a guy that's covered the SEC for a long time. And he's a great voice to have here on a Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. Barrett Salee, welcome back to our program. Really appreciate you being here. Thanks for your time. How you doing?
I'm doing good, D.A. What's going on?
You know what? Trying to, I guess, calm some nerves here and some anxiety. Maybe some of that's even actually my own here on the heels of what happened with LSU on Saturday. So you've been around the block a few times. You know that's the way it kind of goes. Everything is great until a loss occurs, and after a loss takes place, all of a sudden we reevaluate all the things that we thought were good just a few days ago.
Yeah. You know, all hell breaks loose. The program's dying. You might as well just fold up the shop and never play football again after one loss. Well, look, I honestly know Georgia fans hate to hear that, but isn't that a compliment? Isn't that a big statement on the current status of Georgia football, that one road loss at LSU sends everybody into freakout mode? If that's not a sort of subtle compliment on where Kirby Smart has the program, I don't know what is.
Yeah, I think that's certainly a fair point. I think I know where you're coming from on that, and I think you're right about that. I also want to get your thoughts on this because, you know, from time to time, I think it's important for us to hear some outside perspectives. Now, you live in the state of Georgia, but you're kind of outside the bubble of Dog Nation. Obviously, the thing that has dominated the conversation here over the last few days is what did or didn't happen for Georgia quarterback on Saturday. Not a good game for Jake Fromm. Nobody will deny that. A lot of Georgia fans saying there ought to be more of Justin Fields. Should have been more in the game against LSU. Some fans hoping for a lot more of Fields against Florida. What do you make of the current quarterback situation in Georgia?
I think that what happened against LSU was more on Kirby Smart than it was Jake Fromm. Jake Fromm had his worst day. We all know that. We all saw it. It's impossible to deny that. But we know that there's more in the playbook for Justin Fields, and yet it didn't even seem like they considered trying to get there. And that's what I think the biggest problem is. I think, look, Jake and Justin both know what's going on. They understand they both have roles. They understand that they're going to fill those roles, and that at times that means one of them's got to sit on the bench. More likely than not, that's going to be Justin Fields most of the time. But in that situation, it was clear that Jake could not get the job done for whatever reason. It was just a bad game, whether he was, this LSU was doing something to him that they that he didn't expect. Whatever the reason, it was clear that Jake Fromm was a liability. So if you have that package, or multiple packages anyway, for Justin Fields, and you say that you trust him, well, then go trust him. Like, do it. Show it to us. So I think that's more on Kirby Smart, for not realizing that there's an option there, that there's an adjustment just waiting for him to make, and he didn't do it. So, look, moving forward, it's not freak-out mode for Jake Fromm. He's had one bad game in his career. He led him to a national championship game last year. So I don't think you need to freak out because of that game. I would be more concerned that the coaching staff didn't make very, very obvious adjustments with their quarterbacks, knowing that those adjustments are not only possible, but they're built into the game plan anyway.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. And I guess if I'm listening to you correctly here, what I hear you saying is that you're more in favor, or maybe think the better solution for Georgia is more of Fields in a backup role, just where he has more freedom to do some of the things that we think he's athletically gifted to do. Does it sound like you're calling for a switch at quarterback, which is what some Georgia fans have been calling for on the heels of not seeing as much of Fields as they would have liked?
Yeah, there's no reason to call for a switch right now. I mean, it's one bad game. You know, I understand the frustration. It's one bad game. He's allowed to have a bad game. You don't want to hear it. You don't want to see it. You don't want that game to cost you anything. But, you need to figure out a way to prevent it from happening again. And that's the most important thing. That's why I think it's really important to get Justin Fields into situations where he's not a backup, where he's not – a role player. If he can take the reins of an offense when it's struggling, go let him do it. And he did it against Tennessee. That drive that essentially set up the touchdown to ice it,
Yeah. That
was pretty much a Justin Fields drive. So you know that exists. So if you know that it exists, you can use that to your advantage. He doesn't have to be a backup. He can have a two-quarterback system that's workable. And I think Georgia wants to get there with Jake being the main guy. And I think Jake should be the main guy. But if you have this sort of built-in, rotation or built-in insurance policy within your offense that you've built basically all offseason, well, use it when you're supposed to. And that didn't happen against LSU.
The most shocking thing for me, though, Baird, about the game on Saturday was Georgia's decision to seemingly abandon the run. Now, Kirby Smart kind of explains it a little bit differently, but the numbers kind of speak for themselves. Elijah Holyfield, in particular, was having a pretty big day, but his carries end up being limited. Now, I'll never pretend that Holyfield is the running back that Chubb or Michelle was a year ago, but I think he's demonstrated that he ought to be getting more carries than he's getting, and the fact that Georgia didn't keep chopping, as its phrase has kind of been on Saturday, that for me was the most shocking thing of all.
Yeah, that was shocking. Now, you have to credit LSU because, they kept an extra guy in there and did, a lot to take that away. So that's not necessarily a Georgia thing, although certainly it played a part of it, but it wouldn't necessarily have been successful the way LSU was playing defensively. I think Holyfield has proven that he needs more of the offense. And look, DeAndre Swift's a great running back, but if you've got that many running backs, and Georgia's been really good at this, throughout the last decade, use them. You've got to use them. So, that helps everybody. That keeps everybody fresh. I mean, all these running backs, want to be 1A. They all do. All the quarterbacks want to be starters. Justin Fields wants to be 1A. But if you've got the ability to protect yourself and give your team options, use them if you're the coaching staff. And yeah, I agree. Holyfield's done a really good job. That game, that drive in the first half when they just ran right down the field, they couldn't do that anymore. Now, part of that's on LSU, part of that's on the coaching staff, but they did abandon the run, and it seems like they put Jake Fromm in a position where to get out of this funk, they wanted him to throw himself out of this funk, and that didn't seem wise considering what was going on with him.
All right, so let's fast forward here a little bit. You know, if you want to go back before the season started, I want to say the South Point Sportsbook had Georgia as a 15-point favorite over Florida. Florida's turned out to be a little bit better. Caesars Palace this week has Georgia as just a 7.5-point favorite against the Gators. The win percentages are going down on some of the analytics sites there as well. Kentucky's also turned out to be better. Would you mind doing a little forecast here of how you think the rest of the season is going to go for Georgia? Does it get right back to its winning ways here and, you know, kind of finishes off much the way that people expected it to? Or is there really something that bubbles up against LSU that now maybe makes you doubt what could have been an 11-1 season now being a 10-2 season, which for most Georgia fans would be a disaster?
Well, again, subtle compliment to Kirby Smart there. No, I don't think anything changes. Felipe Franks can't throw. And Florida's offense, even though, you know, they've played well and, you know, they've sprung a few upsets and are, you know, in the top 15, it's not been because of the offense. It's been in spite of the offense, which is more or less Will Muschamp's, you know, deal at Florida and more or less Jim McElwain's deal at Florida. So Georgia has no issues with that because, you know, even if they're shut down a little bit offensively by what defense at Florida, it's nowhere close to what LSU is right now. So I think Georgia will be fine. You know, it was a bad day last weekend. And I think from a talent standpoint, they're significantly better than Florida. I think from a talent standpoint, they're light years ahead of where Kentucky is. And you look at Kentucky, they're good, but it's been sort of smoke and mirrors. Terry Wilson is one of the worst passers in the SEC right now. So they'll load up on Benny Snell, even though Georgia's rush defense hasn't been great. If you put 11 guys in the box, it can be great pretty easily. And dare Terry Wilson to beat them, and I don't think he can do that. I just think that the freak out over Georgia, I think, is like a little bit exaggerated at this point.
Before we let you go, Barrett, let me go off the subject of Georgia just for a moment. I am fascinated by what's been going on at Auburn. Obviously, most of my audience enjoys that from kind of a, I guess, a guilty pleasure standpoint. But, you know, specifically this notion that there are reports out there that Auburn would be potentially willing to make a move on Malzahn at the end of the season, not worried about the money it would owe him. I think that's somewhere in the neighborhood of almost $40 million by the time this year comes to an end on a buyout there. What do you make of how bad Auburn is, and would really Stephen Leithy, a president there, have the guts to write that big of a check, essentially admitting he made one of the biggest blunders an SEC administrator's made in modern times, and move away from Malzahn at the end of the season? That is a brilliantly fascinating soap opera, although I'm sure it's just absolute misery for the Auburn fans.
Yeah, I mean, I think they would, because you look, and I actually wrote a story about this for CBSSports.com that's going up on Thursday. It made $61 million in profit last year. Not revenue, profit. So, yeah, it's a big check, but they're the eighth most valuable program in college football. So I would imagine that check, and look, buyouts are more guidelines than rules. Yeah, it's 38, whatever it is right now. That gets talked down. That gets negotiated down. So it's a big check, but it's a short-term problem because the money will still come back. So I don't think the finances have anything to do with it. To me, it's more about where the offense is going and where Gus is heading, because they can't run the ball. The offensive line is terrible. He's been the reason that the offensive line is terrible, because the recruiting has slacked in the last 3 years, and he's stubborn. You know, I had a good conversation with a couple of people who I won't name that made this point to me. I think it's really, really smart. Gus Malzahn has been a head coach basically his entire coaching career. He's never had to be an underling. He's, like, with the exception of a few years as the offensive coordinator at Tulsa and Auburn, and 1 year at Arkansas. So if you have never been in a situation where you have to learn from legends or learn from good coaches, you don't really know how to manage a program. You don't really know how to delegate responsibility. Jeremy Pruitt came up under Saban. You know, Urban Meyer came up and did his thing. Yeah. You know, all these guys that are elite head coaches, Dabo Swinney, the same thing. They put in their time and learn. And Gus has really never had to do that. At Arkansas, he was given leeway under Houston Nutt, and they didn't get along at all, and Gus was only there for a year. At Tulsa, he had a little bit of time, and obviously at Auburn as well. But he hasn't really had a ton of that. So I think that's the problem. I think he needs to show less stubbornness. He did that last November, and obviously Jarrett Stidham was a big reason why. But Jarrett's regressed. Gus is now stubborn, and unless that changes, I think they will cut that check, because That's pretty much been Gus's MO for his entire coaching career, even when they went to the national championship game.
Yeah, I think a really interesting point, Barrett, and I look forward to reading your piece at CBSSports.com about that. Speaking of that, as we let you go here, remind folks how we can find more of you. Obviously on Twitter at Barrett Salee. You're on the radio all the time. CBS Sports, we see your work there. But where else can we find more of Mr. Salee here?
Yeah, follow me on Twitter. Download the CBS Sports app. Check us out on the web, CBSSports.com. And the streaming channel, CBS Sports HQ, has been a huge success. It's integrated into our smartphone app, our tablet app, our smart TV app. So if you have a Roku, Fire Stick, Apple TV, all that stuff, CBS Sports HQ is integrated into the app. It's 24/7, 365 sports news and highlights without the yelling, without the politics, without all that stuff. It's basically what ESPN News was when ESPN News first was created. So I'll be on that. I have been on that quite a bit throughout the course of the college football season and will be in the future.
Sounds great, Barrett. It's always fun to have you in the program. You got great insight on the SEC. We'll look forward to speaking to you soon, all right?
All right. Thanks, BA. My pleasure.
Good stuff there from Barrett Salee. And I think his point about Gus Malzahn is kind of interesting, that Auburn's obviously got the money. It generates a lot of revenue. This is a program that's not been afraid to spend money before. They build these gigantic, you know, scoreboards, for instance, video boards. You know, they're always looking to have some things to spend some money on. So we certainly get all of that. That, you know, they obviously are looking to spend that money and do all that kind of stuff. But if you're Stephen Leith, the Auburn president, the administrator here, the thing that you've got to be really careful of, though, is that while you have the money, it is not a very good line to have on your resume that you wasted the money. It's one thing to spend it towards something that, you know, adds value to the program. It's another thing to have to spend that money to erase a mistake that you made here. So ultimately, Auburn may be forced to make this move here. Barrett Salee may be right about that. Some of the other people who've suggested that may be right, too. But that's not the kind of decision that's not going to have some nasty side effects there for Auburn, which could make this a very fun offseason for the Georgia fans who like watching Auburn have to wallow in its misery. And then one more real quick point here. You know, I'm glad to hear Barrett bring up a point that I've brought up a lot here, which is that even with a better record than we would have expected, Florida is still not a great offensive team. Remember, the blowout win against Tennessee came virtually on the heels mostly of short fields to work on. A lot of Tennessee turnovers helped that day. The high point total, I think, is a real misnomer there for what the Florida offense did in Knoxville. Yes, they won at Mississippi State, which is a good win. But there weren't a lot of points necessarily, a lot of offensive production that led to that. You don't have anything to argue about when you beat LSU. That's a huge win for the Florida program. And yet, even in that game, the overall numbers for Felipe Franks don't look great. I'll give Florida credit for being a more physical team than I expected. But the way that Georgia wins this game on Saturday, next Saturday, is by taking advantage of the fact that Florida is still a program that's struggling on offense. One of the reasons why I'm still confident there, even though the point spread shrunk to a certain extent, the percentage chance of winning seems to be going down, this is still a game in which I feel like Georgia's going to step up and play better than it's played. I think a lot of folks in Jacksonville will enjoy that. We've got plenty more Dog Nation Daily coming up right now.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, let's get ready to move on here and do our SEC Through. It's, of course, when you think about SEC Through, a lot of times you think about my friends at MyBookie, especially on Thursdays. It's a chance to do our MyBookie best bets. Before we get to that, let me remind you that if you're looking to get your own best bets down, and let's face it, many of you have got better bets than I do. Well, if you're looking to get yours down, when you pick some winners, you want to get paid, right? You want that fast, no-hassle payout. And that can be true whether it's college football or another sport, playoff baseball still going on. That's a fun thing for a lot of people to bet on. You don't have to just pick the winner. You can do the over-unders. You can do the parlays. There's fights you can bet on. I know a lot of you had some action down the McGregor match a couple of weeks ago. And I don't know if you had any kind of side action on this thing spilling into the crowd. But if you did, I guess that ticket probably cashed as well. Nonetheless, whatever you want to do, go play where the pros play at MyBookie. And right now, if you've never signed up before, you really got to do it now before the offer runs away. When you use the promo code DOGNATION, you can get your first deposit matched dollar for dollar. But you got to go faster. You need to act on that right now. A dollar for dollar match when you use the promo code DOGNATION. You simply find MyBookie online. That's MyBookie. Find them online. Use the promo code DOGNATION. After that, you play, you win, and you get paid. But you can even get paid before you even make your first bet when you make that deposit by using the promo code DOGNATION, because your first deposit can be matched dollar for dollar. So use the promo code DOGNATION, all one word, spelled the way it's supposed to be, D-A-W-G. when you find MyBookie online. All right, speaking of that, MyBookie Best Bets here, and at this point I'm probably kind of grasping at straws, but I actually do have a couple strong opinions on a few of these games. The first one, though, is not necessarily one of those. Auburn is at Ole Miss. Ole Miss is a 3.5-point home underdog. After squeaking by Arkansas last week, you know the Auburn season is a disaster. Here is where I'm probably going to look like a fool on Monday. But I am not quite ready to give up completely on Auburn season just yet. Malzahn may be coaching for his job. Still a better overall talent level. Ole Miss's defense is terrible. If Jarrett Stidham can't move the football against Ole Miss's defense, then he needs to pack it up. Now, Malzahn has said he's sticking with Stidham for the game on Saturday. Obviously, Ole Miss can put pressure on you by scoring points. I just feel like in a last stand situation, Auburn finds a way to win this one by more than the 3.5 points here, or wherever the spread might be when you find it at my bookie. I just feel like Auburn's the play here, minus the 3.5. I guess I'll take him as a MyBookie best bet. I could not have been more wrong with the Tigers a week ago. I'm also going to go upset here in Arkansas with a Tulsa coming to town. Phillip Montgomery, the former Baylor offensive coordinator, is the Golden Hurricanes head coach here. Arkansas is terrible. I just continue to believe that. They've played some SEC teams close, but on the heels of just a gut punch loss to Ole Miss last week, do they pack it in here against Tulsa, who certainly needs the game a lot more than Arkansas probably does? Plus, the Gus Malzahn watch could be on there in Arkansas for a little buyer's remorse from the Hogs fans who maybe would prefer Malzahn, who they almost got, to Chad Morris, who they did get. This could be a tricky situation there in the natural state. Let me take Tulsa plus the 7 here as a MyBookie best bet. I have typically not felt very strong one way or another about Alabama games this season. They're a huge favorite in every game. It's kind of hard to know, will they, you know, cover by a point, which they did last week, or fail to cover by a point, which they did 2 weeks ago. This, though, may be the Alabama game that I feel the strongest about this season. I feel like Alabama, minus the 28.5 at Tennessee, is actually a really strong play on Saturday. It's a MyBookie best bet for me for a couple of reasons. First of all, Tua Tagovailoa's status is in question. That doesn't scare me off this point spread as much as you might think. If Jalen Hurts plays significantly, which I believe he will, I think that Nick Saban will look to showcase some offense around Hurts as a reward for him sticking around. That's another reason to like Alabama here. I also think that Nick Saban has spent an offseason trying to combat what he views as negative recruiting. When Saban says negative recruiting, what I think he actually means is young coaches with more energy than him trying to sell a very similar kind of program and a very similar kind of product. I think he views Jeremy Pruitt as a traitor, maybe too strong of a word, but certainly a potential threat to him. I think beating him by 40 or 50 points is a good way to kind of quiet some of that recruiting talk. Remember, Tennessee got J.J. Peterson for the 2018 class from Alabama as a for instance here for what Pruitt can do as a recruiter. I think that Saban's actually looking to beat Pruitt bad on Saturday. I will take Alabama minus the 28.5 and call that a MyBookie best bet. Then a couple other quick ones to mention here. LSU, we all saw last week how good they are, but this is a scary spot for the Tigers. Maybe not to lose the game, but maybe looking ahead to Alabama in 2 weeks, maybe still basking in the glory of storming the field after beating Georgia. Watch Mississippi State to keep this close. Plus the 7 or wherever you find it at MyBookie, that's a MyBookie best bet for me. I don't have a strong opinion on Vanderbilt and Kentucky. Vanderbilt's a hard team to evaluate one way or another. They're up, they're down, they're somewhere in the middle. You know, Derek Mason, I think, is kind of a blowhard, to be honest with you. That's not a coach I have a great deal of respect for. But overall, this is probably a stay away for me, obviously, as Kentucky looms for Georgia the Saturday after the cocktail party. We'll make that your SEC through. All right, and now, of course, here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza, it seems like really every day this week we've had to have some kind of conversation with the quarterback situation, what did happen against LSU, what many fans hope to see happen against Florida. And, you know, before I let you hear a little bit from Kirby Smart talking about Justin Fields and kind of updating his status or what Smart believes Fields' status is for the game next Saturday, I think it's important to remember. What you've seen publicly from the Fromm camp and from the Fields camp all season long continues to be commendable. I think both these guys, we know that privately Fromm and Fields both want to play. We know that, right? But both these guys continue to behave with so much dignity and class here. They're not tweeting a bunch of stuff. You know, they don't have parents spouting off a bunch of stuff. It's all been done in such a first-class manner by both of them. It's one of the reasons why I continue to believe that Georgia's lucky to have both these guys here. You want good guys at every position. Georgia's probably got two good quarterbacks. I think that's a good thing. And I hope the fan base around Dog Nation continues to take the lead of both these quarterbacks who have just behaved in such a really commendable way here. But obviously on the field, the issue is the fact that no matter who plays quarterback for Georgia, the results need to be better than what they were last Saturday against LSU. It's undeniable that some Georgia fans think that Justin Fields is the guy that can bring Georgia that higher level of quarterback play. So will we see more of him next Saturday? Kirby Smart said that option's always available, and it's always on the table. Here's Smart from Tuesday on Fields.
Justin's growing. Justin's getting better each and every day. I think his maturity is getting better in the meeting room. He's picking things up. He's developing. He's certainly eager to get that opportunity, and he continues to progress and do things in practice, and those opportunities may present themselves. We're never closing that door completely at all because we got to play the guy that gives us the best chance to win.
You know, I don't think it should ultimately be a surprise here that Smart's tactic with the quarterback position is the same as virtually every other, you know, tactic he's taken when he's spoken publicly about issues around his program going back when he first took the job here in 2016. Smart is not going to be influenced by outside forces here. Fans that want to see more of one player at one position, during our comment section earlier, folks were talking about Demetrius Robertson or a quarterback here or a running back there. You know, Smart's just not going to be influenced on that, which is ultimately what you want from your coach on any other kind of issue. Now, I'll be the first to tell you, from time to time, I wish he would be a little bit more forthright with the quarterback situation. You know, give me more of an explanation of how the pecking order really is working out at practice and why, you know, Field seems to play different amounts in certain games, whether, you know, it's almost zero against Missouri, slightly more against Tennessee, and kind of, you know, even more than that in some of the lesser opponents Georgia's played. I wouldn't mind seeing a little more forthright conversation from Kirby Smart from time to time. But the Kirby Smart that got Georgia the playoff a year ago is the same version of himself who's also dealing with his quarterback situation right now. And I do take Kirby's word here. The door is open for Fields to play more. And over the course of these 2 weeks, the week away from the watchful eye of the media heading towards a bye week on Saturday and then the intense week of practice getting ready for the cocktail party, I think Justin Fields is going to have a chance during those practices to step up and prove that he's worth more playing time this season. It's obviously going to be a fascinating storyline to watch out for. Let me also take a moment to step away from the football world and mention something else for a moment. You know, one of the cool things that I get to do here on Dog Nation Daily is hear from a lot of you. We talked yesterday about an avid Dog Nation Daily listener and viewer, Matt Chastain, who's got a great new movie coming out this weekend, a small group. I was really proud to be able to tell his story yesterday. And when there are great things going on in our community, I like celebrating that. When there's also, something that is a little less happy, we also from time to time want to bring that up as well. Carlos Cardozo, who many of you recognize from our comment section as a longtime commenter to the program, he's actually been battling cancer here a little bit, and he reached out to me on Twitter yesterday to let me know why we haven't seen as much of him in our comment sections as of late. And I just told him that obviously our prayers around this program are very much with him. I know many of you feel the same way. Now it sounds like Carlos, who's obviously a big time fighter, he's going to fight this and win this battle, is well on his way back to a full recovery, which is great to see. He may even be in the cocktail party in a couple of weeks here, but that's a frequent commenter who we haven't seen as much from lately. It sounds like he's been battling an illness here, but it also sounds like he's on his way to winning that battle. So Carlos, we say congratulations to you for that. Keep on going, and our prayers are certainly with you. All right, as we get ready to wrap up today's program, let's do so with a couple things here. First of all, Gatorator Countdown. I actually forgot to put the number here on my sheet. What are we, 9 days away? Yeah, 9 days away from the Gatorator Countdown. The great thing is when you get this close to it, all of a sudden it's a lot easier to keep up with exactly when that game's going to take place. This is also the time of year we have to start checking our math a little bit more to make sure we're actually counting down the right number of days. Last year, a Dog Nation Daily listener or viewer checked in with us to let us know that somewhere around 100 or so days out that our countdown wasn't actually correct. So we had to fix it over the course of a weekend. So we'll check our math on this one once again. And I'm getting excited about the Florida game. You know, for all the talk that's out there about Georgia right now, can't wait to see a lot of that kind of stuff cleaned up and corrected by the time you get to the Gators. Also, SEC basketball media days yesterday in Birmingham. Nice to see Tom Crean kind of center stage there. Excited about the basketball season. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Dog Nation Daily.